The long-running saga over who will own Twitter is now, apparently, settled. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. The bird is freed. Four simple words that have cost Elon Musk $44 billion. The world's richest man sent the sentence in a tweet about 6 hours ago, which many have taken to mean he now officially is Twitter's new owner. And one of his first orders of business has reportedly been to fire a number of the social media giant's most senior figures, including its chief executive. Ross Gerber is president of Gerber Kawasaki Wealth and Investment. He's a friend of Mr. Musk's, an investor in Tesla, and now an investor in Twitter. He told the BBC what might be next for the company.
There are a lot of talented people at Twitter, and especially on the engineering side, and they want to retain as much of that talent as possible. And really what they're looking at from the trimming side is management, which they've already started with upper management, and then many of the product managers and products that they've been working on that aren't going anywhere can be cut. So I think Elon is basically hiring for his new company. It's an incredibly difficult challenge to get this right. And that's what Elon thrives on the challenges that you and I definitely don't want to take on. And he's taken that on with EVs, and he's taken that on with space, and now he's taking it on in social media.
That's investor Ross Gerber there checking the numbers. Shares of Twitter are up just slightly in U.S. pre-market trade this morning. Here in Europe, benchmarks are down in the 0.5% to 1% range. That is after fresh figures showed anemic growth across the region in the third quarter. The Shanghai Composite Index sank more than 2% today. Dozens of cities across China have gone back into lockdown, including one that's home to the world's biggest iPhone manufacturing plant. All of that has brought on renewed concerns about the long-term economic impact of Beijing's zero COVID strategy. Elsewhere, Japan's central bank, led by Governor Kuroda, kept its benchmark interest rate in negative territory today. That's a stark contrast to other global central bank moves to aggressively raise rates to tackle rampant inflation. Robert Carnell is chief Asia economist at ING. He explains the Bank of Japan's decision is because what that economy does not have is what others around the world do demand.
They do have some inflation. It's not like they don't have any, and they've got more than they used to. That's the real nub here for Kuroda. He wants to see inflation driven by the demand side, not by supply side shortages. That's what they've got at the moment. That's what's driving the vast majority of it. And what he'd really love to see is wages picking up and beginning to drive some quality inflation. And until he sees that, as far as he's concerned, this isn't going to stick. And so they're going to keep policy as easy as they can go.
And at the same time today, the government has announced some fiscal support for households that are dealing with those higher energy bills. Is that going to make the Bank of Japan's job harder in a sense?
Well, in a way, not, because what the Bank of Japan's trying to do is not control inflation. In a way, it really wants it to let rip, and it's not happening. So unlike a lot of governments around the world where you do see this policy in conflict, the government's giving tax breaks or subsidies to try and offset the impacts of higher prices. In Japan's case, it's a very different story. They'd love inflation to pick up a bit more. You know, in the Bank of Japan's case, what they'd really love to see is inflation really picking up and getting spending going again. So what the government's doing is actually helping them to push that along.
But this has been a very long-running problem in Japan. So what is it going to take to get people spending and to get prices rising?
I don't think anybody really knows the answer to that question. Actually, one perhaps controversial suggestion is higher interest rates. When you've got rates absolutely flat zero and you're getting nothing in return for your very substantial savings, and also you're allowing your currency to weaken, and so all your import prices are going up, for a lot of the elderly people in Japan, the savers who are reliant on those savings incomes, this is really making their life much harder. A bit of interest rate income would actually go quite a long way for them.
And you mentioned the currency, the yen there. It's down about 20% this year against the U.S. dollar. And authorities, according to many reports, have spent nearly $20 billion trying to stabilize that decline. What does that mean for the central bank's job and for the economy overall?
I think intervention in FX markets and currency markets to try and stop your currency from weakening is often a pretty futile exercise. And I think that's definitely the case here with Japan. You know, unless you have the policies to back it up, your currency is going to continue weakening. And the reason it's weakening is because interest rates are flat zero and not likely to go anywhere anytime soon. So, you know, if they want to keep on doing this, I'm sure the FX traders out there will be very happy to take their money off them. But it's not going to do much other than slow the pace of what seems like an inevitable continued decline.
Robert Carnell at ING, thanks so much for your time this morning.
You're welcome.
To Northern Ireland now, which hasn't had a fully functioning government for 8 months. That's because Brexit has caused a rift between the two biggest parties who must agree to form a new government. It all means that fresh elections are now necessary to try to break the deadlock. But as the BBC's Chris Page reports, that stalemate has caused real problems for businesses and families in Northern Ireland.
Stephen Reaney's 7-year-old daughter, Abigail, has a number of medical conditions.
Yes.
Their family is one of many thousands who've been affected by the problem of hospital waiting times. Northern Ireland has the longest in the UK.
It's a lot of stress that the family don't need, because looking after Abigail is stressful enough. You've the added pressure then of chasing consultants, trying to fight to get her onto a waiting list. It's just been living hell. Abigail's been on a waiting list most of her life, and to rely on the health service as much as we do, it's a shame and disgrace for any child, not alone a disabled child.
No big policy challenge is simple to solve.
We understand there are difficult political issues, but for businesses, we need decision making.
Gillian McCauley is president of the Northern Ireland Chamber of Commerce.
We're looking at 3 years of a new executive from starting in 2017. We've got a couple of years of COVID with many things put on hold, and now an executive that hasn't sat for 170 days. And I think it's just the cumulative effect of all of that that we're starting to see is having real impacts on business. There's just a lack of confidence, really, as a result of having no executive.
Stephen Kelly is from the trade organisation Manufacturing NI. He draws the connection between the difficulties in the health service and the health of the economy.
The reality is that 1 in 4 people in Northern Ireland are on a waiting list, but it's also 1 in 4 of our workforce. The health service needs a sustainable budget. Everybody agrees that there's a plan there that will get people the care and attention that they need. That's the care and attention for 1 in 4 of our workforce as well. So I think we're all frustrated by everything that's going on. But listen, we're in a space now that decisions have to be taken.
Decisions lie once again with voters. It's likely the ballot boxes will be set up and ready for them on the 15th of December.
That's the BBC's Chris Page reporting from near Stormont, the seat of government in Northern Ireland. And in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.